Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Tribe of Unicorns. I'm your host, Kendra Beavis, and today we are talking about Enneagram types. This one is long, so I have all of the timestamps for each type in the show notes, so make sure that you check that out if you want to skip ahead. But we are talking again with Julie Wenger, and she is enlightening all of us into who we are and what an Enneagram even is. So grab a cup of coffee. Here we go. Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Tribe of Unicorns. And if you've been listening along this season, we have Julie Wenger back on with us today. She is a business and identity coach and an author and all sorts of other amazing things. So welcome back.
Thanks. I am so pumped about this episode.
Me too. Like, the first one was amazing. I could not wait to get to this conversation.
Oh, okay. Here's what I need to preface this with for all of your people. Yes. Buckle up, because a single episode on the Enneagram is like drinking from a fire hose. So here's what's beautiful about it being recorded is you can loop back and listen again, or like back it up 30 seconds because you need to, you know, absorb something. There is a lot of info, and we're going to cram in as much context as possible to give you a bit of foundation on this system. And then, I mean, if they want a deeper dive, we could probably link out to the series we did on my podcast that went through all the types.
Absolutely. So we'll throw a
link in the show notes or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah. All right.
Where do we start?
Okay. So let's go back to just a little bit of story, because I want people to understand the power of this system. So essentially what the Enneagram is it is a system or a tool for understanding how are we wired at a really core level. So what do we need? What do we want in life? What are the things that we try to avoid at all costs, to stay away from? What are our superpowers and our kryptonites? And for me, this showed up in my life in the middle of overwhelm and burnout. And I think we talked a little bit about the transition out of real estate last time, so we won't spend too much time there. But in the middle of this, realizing that I lost myself in the process of people pleasing and trying to make everyone else happy, one of the things that started to show up in front of me over and over and over again, which is, I swear how God gets my attention, is the Enneagram. I was listening to podcasts, the Enneagram. Old coach, the Enneagram. Like, just random stuff everywhere. Okay. So I'm like, all right, I get the message. I'm going to read about this system. And I had never felt so seen in my entire life. Like, nail me to the wall. How do you even know this stuff about me? I'm reading this book and it's like, it literally is describing me. And I've heard this over and over and over again. And what's been really interesting about it for me is, because it has such a deep foundation, there's so many layers and there's so much flexibility. It's not that this is one of those systems that puts you into a box. Like, here's your test and here's your results and that's you, and have a fun life, you know, like go live into that. This is more like, here's you at your kind of normal average level of health, mental health, spiritual health, whatever. Here's you when you're not healthy. So hello, we can watch out for our warning flags. And here's you when you're at your best and what's possible for you. So it kind of creates this map back to ourselves. And it is this self-awareness accelerator, the likes of which I've never seen. So I use this in my coaching practice all the time. People who are, you know, lacking purpose, who know there's more for them, people in business, there are so many applications of this thing. And it's become really popular and trendy. And so you'll see a lot of memes out there. It's like, oh, type two says this when they're going on an airplane, or whatever randomness, right? Right. And those are fun. And sometimes they're accurate. But the reality is that this thing has so much power in terms of building our own self-awareness and self-compassion. Yeah. And developing grace for ourselves and giving ourselves permission to stop trying to be other people and be like other people and do things the way other people do it. And so much ability for us to create, I think this is really important, compassion for other people, because we start to understand that other people's lens of the world, how they perceive it, how they interact with it, what their needs are, and, you know, what their subconscious is working towards trying to get met, are actually fundamentally different than us.
Yes.
That other people, and me and my husband are a perfect example, because that was one of my early awarenesses. So I am, and we'll get into types in a minute here, but I'm a type 2. I'm a helper. I'm a feeler type. I am all feeling all day long. I make decisions based on feeling. I don't even have words for it. And I am empathetic, and I feel other people's feelings, and I cry at commercials, and I don't know why. And like all of this very emotionally based stuff, right? Very for other people, no boundaries. Well, recovering boundaryless people. That's what I call twos. And my husband is an 8. So my husband is in this group that we call the gut types. Mm-hmm. Instinctual, like just, you know, gut sense, that kind of thing. And he is very like more aggressive personality, dominant personality. Like they're very strong people and they avoid vulnerability because vulnerability is not safe. And so we'd gone through like 15 years of marriage. And I'm like, you just need to feel your feelings and you didn't need to talk about them more. And like, what's wrong with you? Cause clearly my way of doing things is the best way. And he's like, I don't know how to function like that. Right. And I started to read about these types and I was like, oh, he actually doesn't. So I've been putting this burden on him for years to try to be more like me. And I've been trying to be more like wittier on the fly because I've got this freeze response and stress and he's got a like fight response and stress. And I'm going like, I need to be more like that. And he needs to be more like me. And I'm, whoa. No, actually, because we are created differently and wired differently, and that's okay. When we can understand that, we can start to interact with each other differently. So that flows into everything from hiring people. Like we use this in hiring assistants and people to teams and clients and all sorts of stuff, to your personal relationships. Not so much kids, because kids are like, I've heard it essentially referred to as wet cement. And I agree with that entirely. So we don't want to box them in. Yeah. Till they're like late teens. And I mean, really till their prefrontal cortex is developed, it's hard to type people. So this has been a total life changer. I am not overestimating. I am not exaggerating. This thing has literally changed all aspects of my life.
Well, I think
and how I understand the world.
Yeah. Don't realize that other people don't have the same thought process and the same, because I've heard so many times people say, how could they, or of course they would think this or do that because of, you know, this is an expected reaction, but
yeah,
their brains don't work like that. Not everyone has the same way we think about things and our same reaction. 100%.
Mm-hmm. So let's get into some typing stuff, because I think that'll give a lot of context to that.
I'm actually, yeah. I looked at my results. I'm a 9.
Oh,
and my wing is a 1.
Okay. So let's start there. Okay. Because it's actually in my notes, we're going to start with testing, because this is something that I get asked the question about all the time. Like, what's your favorite test? What test should I take? So here's the scoop on testing. Tests are helpful, mm-hmm. but you know yourself better than the test. Mm. There are a lot of different ones out there. I personally am a really big fan of, it's called the RETI, R-H-E-T-I, the Riso Hudson Enneagram Type Indicator. It's cheap. It's like fairly accurate. You're within somewhere in your top 3 normally. I don't think I've ever seen anyone type outside of their top 3 that come back in that test. Other tests, the quality of them, we'll see mistyping sometimes. Mm-hmm. So it helps to narrow the pool. And then we go looking for, does this fit or not?
Right.
And how can we go about confirming it? Which is like my jam, do that all day long. So with tests, just hold them loosely, mm-hmm. because they're like 75 to 85% accurate.
Okay.
Based on your level of self-awareness and the quality of the test. So just throw that out there. Sure. I also want to make a quick note about typing other people.
Okay.
Don't. We call this in the Enneagram community type snipering. And I just like, I think it's the most hilarious thing. And when I first discovered this, I went around and I type snipered everybody. Okay. Like my family is this, my brother's this, my mom is this, my dad is this, my husband's this. But here's the thing. Okay. Is I have like 130 plus hours of formal training in this thing. And I read people for a living, mm-hmm. and I still mistype people if I have to guess, because the behavioral things that people do, there's a lot of overlap between types. And so we don't know. So it really is a journey of self-discovery. We can try and narrow it down and figure out how do we communicate with people based on what we think might be the reality and watch for, does that work or not? But just be really careful, because we don't want to tell someone, hey, you're this. And mm-hmm. then they go try to live into that. And it's not actually them. And it can be more harmful than helpful. So that's that. Now I will get off my soapbox. So the Enneagram, and I'd encourage all of you to take a quick look, like Google just for the diagram so you can get some context here, but it is an old system, like really old. And the personality piece of it is probably like 100 years or so that it's been under development, maybe, but the actual diagram structure has been used in a lot of contexts, like going way far back. So here's what the outside of the circle represents, because it's a circle structure with the numbers 1 through 9 around it. And then there's a bunch of lines that go through the middle. The outside of the circle has 9 types, numbered 1 through 9. And we like the numbers because they don't put people into a box. Now there are anecdotal names, so we will go through some of those, but the outside of the circle represents like wholeness and unity and completeness. It's not some weird like witchcraft symbol. Like when I first saw it, I went, does this work with my Christian beliefs? But it's actually not like, it's not some weird woo-woo thing. So we'll just throw that out there. So here's a quick overview of the 9 types, and we'll get into as much detail as we can in a bit. Number 1, we call them the perfectionist or the improver or the reformer. We've got a few different names. They are characterized by a need, a core desire to be good, to be right, to have integrity, to live the right way. They're an idealistic type that needs to improve the world. And they feel this need to be perfect. Type 2s are the helpers. That's me. I'll just out myself. They are sometimes called the compassionate helper or the befriender. They are defined by a need to be loved and needed. They are warm, they're caring, they're empathetic. Usually there are some other versions within each of these types that present a little bit differently. So I'm a more intense version of a 2 than like most. I'm a little less warm, nurturey, a little more fire.
You're on fire.
right. I'm not going to start singing right now. This girl's on fire. Yeah. So
the intro to this episode.
nothing like some Alicia Keys. Okay. So 2s are warm. They're caring, empathetic. They're givers. They're other people focused, like give till they have literally nothing left kind of givers. Number 3, type 3 are called the performers or the achievers. They are very success oriented. They're image conscious. They are doers. They get stuff done. And sometimes at the expense of the little details that the perfectionists are defined by. And they have a need to feel valuable to succeed. They are the you are what you do type that pulls their value from that. Type 4, we call the individualists or the creative romantics. Mm-hmm. They're like the feelers of all feelers. We say they are their feelings, not they have feelings. And they have this need to be understood, to be special, to be unique, to be different. They're characterized by this feeling like something is missing in them that everybody else has. So life is a quest to go find that thing, because if they can find it out in the world, then maybe it exists in them. So they're really attuned to beauty. They're another idealist type. They see how can we create a more beauty-filled world? So they're like they're a super cool type, but they're like the artists often, and the just like not the rule followers and a little bit more, you know, unique type. Type 5, we call the investigators or the observers. These are a type that are the least emotionally driven. They don't trust feelings. So they just kind of sit back and they watch and they take in the world more than they interact with it. And they have this need to kind of predict the future, to be able to gather information so that they're competent and they're capable and they can stay safe that way. Hmm. Type 6, kind of similarly, they need to also feel safe. And they are called the loyalist. They're worst case scenario thinkers. They are also the voice of reasons, kind of 2 polarities of that. But they're planners. They take care of everybody else. They're a type that really questions authority. It's like, can I trust me with you? Mm-hmm. And over time, they kind of build things up in terms of trust. But it's like, if you break that with them, like they're done. So, and then 7s, we call the enthusiasts or the visionaries. visionary optimists. They're the other idealist types. There's three of them, ones, fours, and sevens. And they look at the world as, how can this be more joy-filled? They have a need to be happy and avoid negative emotions. Yeah. They don't like the tough stuff. And they are creative and they're usually very energetic and outgoing. They're not always extroverts, but often they're very like bubbly and just see the big picture, but don't like to get into the weeds of the details often. Mm-hmm. They just have this need to be satisfied. Type eights, which we were talking about a little bit earlier, they're called the challenger, or sometimes the controller, but less so that one. They're a more intense type. They're more confrontational. They're very integrity driven. So actually use conflict and confrontation to gauge if people are being in integrity.
Okay.
And if they're pushed, where do you actually stand? So that they know if they can, you know, trust you and trust your integrity. They're protectors. They need to be strong and avoid being vulnerable, because it's a dog eat dog world. And if I'm vulnerable, I'm going to get taken advantage of. They are also defined as, in a lot of Enneagram traditions, as a need to be against. Hmm. So if there's a position, it's like, I'm going to pick the opposite because I can, which for types like me that are like less confrontational, right, right, or type nines, which we're going to get to, that are like no confrontation. Eights can be like a lot sometimes, but they're really amazing leaders and they get stuff done. So type nines, the peacemakers or the mediators. They have a need to avoid conflict. They want to maintain inner peace. It's like, don't rock the boat. So if I can help everyone else be okay outside of me, we won't have conflict and then I'll be all right, which isn't actually the case, but that's kind of the subconscious narrative. They have a desire for wholeness and they have this really unique ability to see things from everyone else's perspective and bring people together, which is why they're called the mediator sometimes, and help each other see from others' perspectives. But sometimes they get so lost in other people's perspectives and what we call merging that they lose themselves and they don't even know what they think or what they want. Mm-hmm. So that's the quick rundown on the nine types.
Yeah.
Now here's where we're going to go next, because some people are going to be sitting there and they're like, well, like I'm definitely this,
right,
or
right.
I have no idea. None of those sound like
or
me.
Or like okay? Three of them sound like me.
Well, yeah. And I mean, we're kind of a combination of everything, but we have a dominant lens that we see the world through. And that is essentially our type. So this is a key distinction. You have a type. You're not a type. It's not, I am a two. It's, I function as a two, or I see the world through a two lens. And often we'll still just kind of default to I'm a two. But if you understand the difference, that it's not who you are, but it's a personality construct. And essentially personality is a collection of self-protective patterns and defense mechanisms. How do I get my needs met? And how do I stay safe? And how do I move through life in a way that is okay for me? Mm-hmm. So that's an important piece. Here's where we're going to go next. Okay, deep breath. I told you, fire hose, just like pause and take a breath if you need to, and then come back.
Yes.
So here's where we're going to jump next is all of these nine types are broken into groups of three. We call these the triads. And okay. Specifically the triad we're going to talk about, because we're not going to jump into a whole bunch of the other ones, like literally you could study the system forever and not know all of it, but we're going to talk specifically about what we call the centers of intelligence. And this is the most common one that you'll hear about if you're, you know, watching all the memes or if you're reading the books or like doing kind of entry level learning about types, is the head people, heart people, and gut people. So types 8, 9, and 1 are gut people. They're instinct and action oriented. They just sense things. So they'll make decisions just based on that gut instinct that we hear about, like my gut just says.
Yeah.
And there's actually intelligence there. And I think this is really important because our society is so driven by thinking, right? Like cognitive, can you put words to it? Can you explain it? Is it logical? But what we're finding in neurophysiology and neurobiology is that there are neurons like in our brain, in our heart, and in our gut.
Wow.
And so there are people who learn to interact with the world through this gut sense primarily. They also think their way through things and feel their way through things, but we have a primary center. So eights, nines, and ones primarily start with that gut sense, that instinct.
Yeah.
And then depending on what else they're connected to, they'll have a secondary center and they'll have a, what we call repressed center. Okay. So for eights, as an example, their dominant is gut. Their secondary is often more of that head space, mm-hmm. because they're tied to type seven on one side, which is a thinker type, and nine on the other side, which is another gut type. And we'll talk about stress and security after, but they kind of got links out everywhere. And it depends on, you know, what people have developed, but there's usually one that's kind of like, yeah, I just don't use that much. And because of the lack of vulnerability and wanting to be vulnerable, they'll often repress that feeling space.
Okay.
So all types have that. Types two, three, and four are feeling types. So they function and perceive the world through feeling. And it's, again, not always with words attached. And the society and the culture we live in doesn't always give a lot of credit to that. So personally, as a heart type, I've gone through a lot of life, like, well, I need to be able to explain it. And I can't always. And if I try to do things through just thinking and logic, I'll make the wrong call.
Mm.
But if I can trust myself and my feeling and my kind of heart level intuition, because it exists both heart and gut spaces, I'll often make the right call for me. So understanding that there's actually intelligence there, and I've learned to perceive and interact the world through that and pick up cues through that, is like all kinds of permission. The last group is the head types, five, six, and seven. And they're the thinkers. They think their way through everything primarily. Now, you'll have people who are listening who are going, well, I'm a one and I'm supposed to be a gut type, but I spend a lot of time in my head. Yes, ones do that. They're still primarily a gut type, but there's a lot of time spent up in that thinking space.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on what wings are developed, so wings are the number on each side of you. They're like salt and pepper for your personality. We can pull coping mechanisms and like abilities and skills and perception of the world from there, but we don't dominantly live there. So it depends on, you know, their own personal life and their experience and what they've had to reach into, what they just naturally lean into. So we'll get into wings a bit more in a bit, but okay. So there's these three different groups. Mm-hmm. And within all of those groups, here's what's interesting, is there's always one type who, to use the thinkers, or actually let's use the gut people as an example. There's always a type who is like, I'm not going to do whatever emotion underpins us. So gut types are driven by anger.
Mm.
There's an underlying anger that exists for all of them. So for eights, they're like, I am going to tackle that and dominate it. Nines are like, nope, don't do anger. I am going to, nope, that's chaos. That's discomfort. That's conflict. We are going to shove that and bury that so deep. It's never going to come out, but then it leaks out as like passive aggressiveness.
Mm-hmm.
Or if something comes up that's really important, we call it a just cause. Mm-hmm. It's like roar and it just erupts and they surprise themselves and everyone around them. And then the ones take that anger and they point it at themselves.
Okay.
Which is super fun. So they've got a really loud inner critic. Now as a nine, what shows up there for you?
Oh, 100%. Like if someone hurts my kids or if I've had to, that's where otherwise I'm like chill, cool, calm, collected, you know, peaceful Zen. But yeah, like that's where I've seen that, like seeing daggers when mm-hmm. something there's
mama bear.
Yeah. Big time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So within each grouping, there's always a type that's like, we are outward energy with whatever the emotion is. So for thinkers, it's fear. And for heart types, it's shame or sadness. Sometimes it's referred to as grief. There's some discrepancy within the Enneagram community on that one, but as a heart type, I identify with grief and sadness personally, because we all deal with shame.
Yeah.
But there's always a type that, so for heart types, it's outward. For type twos, of I'm going to take all my feeling, I'm going to take this sadness and this just feeling energy, and I'm going to focus it outwards on other people. I'm not going to feel my own feelings. I'm going to feel my feelings through other people and their feelings. It's a whole thing. It's interesting. Oh. And then threes, the achievers, are like, no, don't have time for feelings. I'll deal with that when I'm done all these projects and things that I'm doing to prove my value. And fours are internalizing, and they can be very like melancholy and introspective, and they just will sit with their feelings, and it's good. So we have this, you know, sixes outward. I'm going to plan. I'm going to focus on other people. Fives are very inward focused, and sevens are like, ain't nobody got time for fear. I'm going to go live life and have fun. Okay. So that's how all that functions. Now, when we get into a little more detail on types, here's a couple of things that we're going to jump into for each type. And we're going to just roll through it, because I warned Kendra, this is going to be the most guest talking episode ever in the history of episodes, because we got a lot to cover. We're going to talk about the kryptonite, so the thing that takes them out. Now, in traditional Enneagram language, they would call this the deadly sin of the type. I love Jesus. I don't love that religious language. So we're going to call it kryptonite. And we're also going to talk about the superpowers of each type. What are some of the things they're really good at? What do they fear? What do they desire? And what does healthy, unhealthy, and average look like? And then we'll see if we have some time to get into a little bit of, you know, wings and stuff, but we'll probably keep it a little higher level. So type eights, challengers, couple of details. The thing that takes them out, we call it lust, which is essentially that they crave intensity in all things, excessiveness in all things. So they can be like domineering, confrontational, intimidating. They're notoriously blunt. It all masks this vulnerability. They just wall up on the whole vulnerability thing. They have this fear that underpins that of being harmed, controlled, or violated. And with that, the flip side, the desire, the thing they want in life and they move towards is to protect themselves. Because then I don't have to worry about this harm, this control, or this violation.
Right.
Now, when they're healthy, the best of them, they're protectors, they're leaders, they get things done that people think can't be done. Mm-hmm. And they start to embrace vulnerability. Inside every eight is like this soft teddy bear, like loving, caring human, but they've got to know they can trust you with their vulnerability to be able to let the walls down. And that takes time. When they're not healthy, when they're kind of in an average space, they can be steamrollers. It's just, we're getting stuff done and your emotions are secondary. Like, let's go. This needs to happen. They can be very black and white and they can struggle with patience. And when they're unhealthy, so if we look at resilience as a spectrum of, you know, healthy to average to unhealthy, there's like a cliff beside unhealthy of, and now I'm in fight, flight, freeze mode. Okay. Right. So when they're unhealthy and they haven't quite fallen off that cliff yet, they believe that they're going to be betrayed. They get suspicious and vengeful, and they destroy as much as they create. Now, when they fall off the cliff, then we start seeing people roll into what we call their stress space. So for eights, they have this line through the circle of the Enneagram to type five. So when they flip their lid, when their prefrontal cortex goes offline, when they're in that fight, flight, freeze, they're usually more dominantly flight or fight, but they take on some of these five characteristics, type five, of just going inside themselves, shutting down, being more blunt, spiraling into like research rabbit holes of just what can I control and what's coming. And like, they just really, really, really need control over their lives, and they'll start to control other people. That's always a flag when they start to shut down and go inwards that, hey, like subconscious warning flares shooting up into the sky, you're not good.
Yeah.
Now, intentionally, when they are healthy, they can pull some skills and some resources and some abilities from that space. They just can't stay there. So some of the researching analytical things that fives are really known for, eights have access to that, but they still need to stay in their dominant space to be healthy. When they are really healthy, they'll often pull from the other line for them is to type two. So start to pull some empathy. Mm-hmm. They'll start to pull a little bit more softness, a little bit more nurturing energy. So, I mean, that's a really cool target for them. For this type that is like, no, I can't let my walls down and be vulnerable, to move to a type that's like very, typically very open. So we'll leave eight there. for now. Like I said, there's lots more in terms of, you know, childhood and eights at work and stuff, but eight wing seven, they're outgoing, they're energetic, they're fun. They're super entrepreneurial. When they're not healthy, they can be ambitious and reckless. Mm-hmm. Eights with a nine wing are approachable. They're a little bit more peacemaking and supportive. They're just a little bit more calm, toned down version of an eight. So if we jump into type nine, thing that takes them out, we call it sloth, which is super fun, right?
Yeah, what does that mean?
But it's referred to as kind of a spiritual laziness. So essentially what happens for nines is they fall asleep to themselves, to their own needs, to their own desires, to their own development, to their responsibility for becoming their own person, because they have this subconscious story. Because we don't actively pick this stuff. They have this story of, if everyone else is okay, then I'll be okay. So I'm just going to like go along with what everybody else wants, because no one really values my opinion anyway. So like, I'm just not going to make noise. And so with that, when you do that for long enough, you start to just not even pay attention to what is it I need or what is it I want. And there's some resentment that can breed there.
Yeah.
But it's quote unquote calmer. At least that's the idea.
Mm-hmm.
So they fear loss, separation, fragmentation, like disconnection, essentially. And they desire peace of mind and wholeness. So nines, when they're super healthy, they are mediators. They value the perspective of other people. They can harmonize differences between other people. And they're self-actualized. They start to understand, here's what I want, here's what I need, and speak up for that.
Mm-hmm.
When they're average, they're sweet and outgoing on the outside, but they're passive aggressive and stubborn. So you ask them to do something, they'll say, yeah, I'll do that. And then they won't. It's like, nope, can't make me. But if a nine gets angry, the joke is that you won't see it until 3 days later and they won't know why they're mad. So that's that disconnection from self showing up.
Mm-hmm.
When they're not healthy, they can't make a decision. Like, ask a nine where they want to go for dinner and don't give them options. It's kind of mean. If you can give them a couple options, then they can pick something instead of doing, well, what do you want? Right. But when they're not healthy, they'll still just be in like decision paralysis.
Yeah.
They're also known for numbing when they're not healthy. They'll like just sit down and watch Netflix. They'll binge eat. They'll just like check out, and they will just not get stuff done. So sometimes, and this probably like, here's what the Enneagram's really good at. Okay. Is calling out all of our crap, and the language can be kind of harsh sometimes. So it's like, you gotta be like open to, what does this say about the challenges for me so I can overcome them? And so it's this like, nine start slow and they get slower.
Mm-hmm.
Like the move fast and the like, accomplish things. And, you know, there's no warp speed typically for nines until they become more self-aware, but it's kind of this, just like you said, chill. Like, we'll do this thing, but oh, like this is a distraction. Let's, you know, so it's like half mowed lawns and half cocked bathtubs and things like that are kind of hallmarks. And like I said, there's different versions of each type. So we'll see some that are more active and some that are less active, but that's like a whole nother level of diving into this. So, nines, when they're stressed out, when they flip over that ledge or that cliff we're talking about, they start to take on some of the patterns of type six. So they get worried. They get into that worst case scenario kind of planning. They're not necessarily sure what they're worried about, but it's like this fear shows up and like something's going to go wrong. Versus when they're healthy, they start to take on some behaviors of three where they focus more, they get more done. It's just like, we're moving.
Yeah.
We're accomplishing things. We're not getting so distracted and pulled off course, and we know who we are and what we want.
Yes.
So that's some of the differential there. Nines with a eight wing, they're more energetic. They're more confident. They're more outgoing. They can be a little bit more confrontational relative to other nines, not relative to eights. It's still like nothing compared to an eight. But they're, you know, willing to at least bring things up that bother them. Nines with a one wing, they have a really strong sense of right and wrong. They're more focused. They're a little bit more critical because ones have a really strong inner critic. So they take some of that on. They can be a little more introverted and they can be really steadfast leaders.
Mm-hmm.
So that's nines. Now, type one, the perfectionist or the improver. I like improver better because perfectionism has this like really negative connotation to it. But perfectionist is kind of when they're not in their best space. So their kryptonite is anger. So for a type that's underpinned by anger, because that's got types, this is a type that like they just struggle with anger and anger focused on Double themselves. Anger. They have this, yeah, exactly. They have this need to perfect the world and they get like pissed at other people because they don't take as seriously this need to fix the world and make it better as the type one does, because they see like, here's a pinhole in the wall, or here's the, you know, problem with that process, or like they can be very critical and it just doesn't shut down. That inner critic voice never stops. It's really, really intense. When I'm working with clients with that, it's like we name that inner critic and we have to do a lot of work there because it is so debilitating and can put them into total procrastination. So when they are, and we talked a little bit about this at the beginning, they fear being bad, defective, corrupt. They desire to be good and have integrity. So when they're healthy, they're committed to service, they're balanced, they can forgive themselves and other people for being imperfect. And when they're average, they can be judgmental and comparing, and they spot imperfections everywhere. And they really struggle to accept that imperfection is inevitable. The unhealthy, they fixate on imperfections. They micromanage, they control others. They should all over people all day long. And they don't even realize it because they're so much harder on themselves. Yeah. And this is where the compassion comes in, is we have no context unless we're one of how much harder they are on themselves than they are on us. And that doesn't mean it's okay for them to, you know, beat other people down or anything, but it's still just like, okay, clue. So, when they are stressed, they move to type four and they take on this, like, I call it the emotional teenage girl syndrome, or it's kind of like they get really moody and it's kind of like victim state and everything is really emotional and the anger is really outward, versus when they're happy, when they're healthy, like when they go on vacation. They move over to type seven and they take on some of this, like, let's have fun and joy and things that they don't usually make time for otherwise, because they're responsible for all of these things getting done right.
Trying not to type sniper right now. Go ahead.
I mean, you'll sit, you'll listen, you'll go, ooh, this person, this person, this person, this, but we just like, we hold it internally and we stay curious. Nines with a one wing are a little more introverted. They can be more prone to procrastination. They have a lot of expectations of other people. Ones with a two wing can be a little more extroverted, helpful, empathetic, but also more critical and controlling. And they talk a lot. They preach at people. At their best, they can be generous and problem solvers though, and sense the needs of other people. So that's type ones. And we're just going to keep rolling. Okay. Heart types.
You know what I'll do? I'll put, timestamps too in the show notes.
Ooh,
yes. So people can find their type and listen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then when you're going back and listening through things again, you can say, hey, I think I was type snipering my mother-in-law as this. So type twos, the helpers, our kryptonite is pride. And essentially that is, I can sense other people's needs before they do. So I know what they need before they need it. And I'm going to help, whether they asked me to or not. And it also shows up in, I don't have needs. I don't need anything from anybody. I'll just be for everybody else, which like on both fronts is complete BS. So can we sense other people's needs? Yes, often, but do they want our help? And do we have needs that need to be met? Yeah. So we have to really focus on tuning back into us and starting to build some boundaries instead of giving everything away. We fear being unlovable. That's the core thing. And that's where this grief starts to show up. That's in all heart types, is like, what if I'm not lovable? And so we try to prove and get our needs met for love by giving and giving and giving and taking care of people so that we can be needed and we can feel love that way. Cause you know, we learn when we're little that if I nurture people and I show up for people, then I get some attention back in a way that I can receive it. Cause we all receive and give love differently. It's kind of like the love languages plus this whole level of, you know, personality underpinning. Twos, when they're healthy, they ask what they ask for what they need. They start to love well, they're happy, they have boundaries, like have boundaries, period, but have healthy boundaries. Mm-hmm. They start to understand what's theirs to carry and what's not, start to differentiate between what's my feelings and what are other people's feelings. And here's what's interesting about the Enneagram is that neurobiologically, there's some stuff that's starting to show up and be theorized that, for example, type twos have a higher level of mirror neurons in our brains than other types. And mirror neurons mean that when we see an emotion in somebody else, we actually can recreate it in ourselves, which can be really confusing. It's like, why am I stressed out right now? Oh, because I was spending time with that person and they're really stressed out right now, which is why we cry at commercials and we don't know why. So fascinating stuff. Anyway, we'll not dive down that rabbit hole, but just to, you know, plug that in there for people. When we're average, see my ADD is showing up. When we're average, we're convinced that the expression of our own needs and feelings will threaten the stability of our relationships, and twos are relationship above all else. It's all, life is all about relationships. That's it. Like fundamentally, that's it. We have poor boundaries when we're in an average space, and we get attached to powerful people and define our identity by them. Like, oh, I'm so-and-so's wife, or I work with so-and-so, or I'm friends with so-and-so. And so it's kind of fun to watch that in people and see how much they do that to gauge their level of health. Because they just don't have like really strong self-worth and self-image. Yeah. All heart types are very image conscious, unhealthy. They are codependent, needy, and they surround themselves with people who just like suck the life out of them, which I lovingly call energy vampires. But we do it to ourselves. We get really insecure. We can be martyrs. And it's more like we give so that we'll get love in return. Right. It's tit for tat.
Yeah.
Which is really hard to accept for a two initially. It's like, no, I'm giving because I'm so generous. And it's like, well, subconsciously. So... twos, when they're stressed out, start to take on some of the characteristics and patterns of eights. So we get micromanaging, we get controlling, and for a nurturing type, we start to like roar and like flip our lid a little bit more. So that's a fun shift for the people around us to go from like soft loving to like, and you know, do this. Yeah. So twos, when they're healthy though, we start to take on some of the creative characteristics and the doing things for us and not for other people that type fours do. And so that's like, for me, that's always been, I'm a singer songwriter and that's been healing for me. And that's been something that's helped bring me back to myself. And now I get why. So that's those pieces. Twos with a three wing are ambitious. They're image conscious. They take on that doer, prove my value that threes have, and value substitutes is a close second for being needed. So there is this really interesting interplay of overachiever and like give that shows up. Twos at the one wing are really focused on doing things properly in the right way. They pull into that perfectionism space, but they can also be a little bit more detail oriented. They can also be more self-critical. So, I mean, that's fun too, a little more prone to guilt, but they often have a little bit better boundaries. Let's see, let's jump to type three. Cause you know, we're just, we got another, what? Five to get through. We'll see if I'm counting right. Type three, the performer achiever. Their kryptonite, the thing that takes them out, is what we call deceit. And deceit is not about being intentionally deceptive. It's about tricking themselves or lying to themselves about who they are. Mm-hmm. Type threes have this natural ability to be like a chameleon, to read a room and say, who do I need to be in the context of this space to be successful? Right. And they will naturally adapt and they don't even realize they're doing it. Now, this can be a superpower when they're healthy, but when they're not, it's like, I don't even know who I am behind all of these masks I have. And I can't bring my friend groups together because they all know a different version of me. So who's even left when I take all these things off? So there's like this fear of, I'm not even like, do I have any value underneath all of this? So they go through life proving and accomplishing. So they get this hit of valuable, but then they have to go do it again because it fades. So they have to learn to find it internally. They fear being worthless and they desire being valuable. They, when they're healthy, start to move towards being known and loved for who they are. instead of what they achieve. They start to be more group focused and community focused and like bigger picture, what's good for everybody, not just for me. They work on being versus doing, and they become really audacious dreamers and optimistic. When they're average, they're overachievers or workaholics or often like gym rats, or they just like go overboard on the things. Yeah. And they're very driven. They see love as something to be earned, and they're super image conscious. So, I mean, I always think of this as like Suits, right? Like the show Suits, but it's not. It's like, what is it that in the context of my life and what I do and who I interact with, what does success look like there? It's not always the midlife crisis, fancy car and like fancy suit and, you know, blowing up your marriage stuff. But they threes bury their emotions so much that often we get to this stage of what I call the purpose life crisis. Okay. Not the midlife crisis, because it branches farther than an age group, and this mountain of emotions they've been building behind them and shoving starts to come tumbling down because they can't hold it up anymore. So that's often where they shift into this really unhealthy space, and failure becomes unacceptable. They can't even admit it. They will walk all over people on their way to success. They can't admit mistakes. They think they're superior, or they behave as superior. Subconsciously, they don't believe that they're worth anything.
Right.
They can be attention desperate. They can be petty. They can be mean. So it's a really hard space to be in and to recover from, because they have to process a lot of pent up emotion, and the body stores that stuff. So from a psychosomatic perspective, there can be some real health challenges that come with that, because we take these emotions, we stuff, and our body holds on to that energy until we can release it and process it, and essentially metabolize it. So, So threes, when they are healthy, when they move towards their growth space, they start to move towards type nine, type six. Or backwards. There's this 3-6-9 triangle, and I always have to think about it twice. But so threes move to type six, and they start to get more focused on everybody, because sixes are like super community, take care of people. So that's that, like, I'm going to plan a little bit more. I'm going to slow down a little bit. I'm going to focus on the group. I'm going to be less concerned with my own image. Mm-hmm. And when they're stressed out, they start to take on the like shutdown of type nine. So threes, for example, if you've got a three in your life and they always do their makeup and they're always dressed and they just accomplish stuff and they're on time and they have an image to keep up, right? When they shut down, they're like on the couch. They can't get themselves to work. They're not doing their hair. They're just like a mess, and they check out. They just numb and numb some more and numb some more. So, I mean, when they can pull from nine on purpose, they can chill out a little bit, and that's great. Right. But it's, if they fall off that cliff, they're just like, peace out. I just can't. Yeah. So, threes with a two wing, they're more charming. They're more intimate. They have a higher need for attention and recognition. If they don't feel appreciated, they get resentful and hostile. They need to be stars. But when they're healthy, they can use some of their energy to help others become successful. Threes with a four wing are a little more difficult. They are a little bit more of a chameleon, but it's, there's balance between threes and this adaptability and chameleon nature, and fours, which are driven by authenticity. Mm. So it's like there's this three nature and then this four going fraud in the background. So they have to figure out how to reconcile those two parts of themselves. They are a little bit more introspective, sensitive, emotionally intense. Now, type fours, the individualist, that's defined by authenticity in like of all things. Okay. Like just everything needs to be real. Their bullshit meter is really well tuned. Their kryptonite's envy, because they believe that everyone else has this satisfaction or this wholeness or this thing that's missing that they don't have. And they see the kind of pretty Instagram perfect picture of other people's lives. And they're like, why don't I have that? Something's wrong with me. So they fear having no identity or significance. Mm-hmm. They think they're just different. Something about them is wrong. They desire to be themselves and to be special and unique. They, when they're healthy, they start to realize they don't have to be special to be loved, and that they're special in the ordinary. when they are healthy, they're also deeply creative. They're emotionally honest. They're connected with other people. They're super attuned to beauty. When they're average, they really struggle with self-acceptance. They exaggerate their uniqueness. So these are like, if you have that street in your city where all of the unique artsy people go and hang out, there's often a lot of fours there. Like it just, the interesting outfits, the art booth on the side of the road, like it's not always, but there's a lot, like that's what I think of as stereotypical four. And they're characterized by melancholy, like the happiness of being sad, and they're okay with it, but they are their emotions. So as their emotions change, it's like their identity changes. So they can't get the solid footing. Because it's like, but if I am my emotion and now I'm happy and I'm sad and I'm like, it's very confusing. So when they're unhealthy, they get manipulative, it's shame central, and they take on a victim space mentality, like 100%. Now in stress, they also take on characteristics of type two. So they pair that victim with codependency and a little bit more manipulation of I'll give to get. Mm-hmm. So that's not great. When they are healthy though, they start to take on, some of the characteristics of type one. So fours are often like the rules don't apply to me. I'm different. But when they start to move into their healthy space, you see that the rules actually have some value, or some of them anyway, and they can work within them and they can just like focus and get stuff done. And they can pull some of that nobility to, pay attention to the details, and it's just like a little bit more balanced out, a little bit less chaotic, emotional, bouncing, pendulum swinging from space to space. Mm-hmm. Fours with a three wing. So we still have that tension of chameleon and authenticity and fraud yelling in the middle, but they want to be unique and the best.
Mm.
That three achiever is like, I need to be the best. They get competitive. They dial back the intensity and the quirkiness because they can read what they need to be. They're a little more outgoing. They're often more dramatic. They're more productive, but they're also more mood swingy. Fours with a five wing, a little more introverted. They're a little more unconventional, sometimes a little bit more socially awkward, concerned with uniqueness and eccentric. So here's the interesting jump, okay, is when we go fours to fives. So type fives, we move from feelers to thinkers, and we move from the feeler to the like feelings are not
my feeler.
I can't trust them and I don't do them. And like, that's just not with that. Yeah. So we call this gap in the bottom of the Enneagram because that's where these two numbers sit. Nine's up at the top. And then we work our way down the existential hole. And it's like the lines don't cross the same down there. And it's just this big gap between these two seemingly very different places. And so bridging those spaces can be very challenging. And sometimes there's like depression or there's challenges that live there. So fives, their kryptonite, the thing that takes them out is avarice, which we actually call like hoarding, but it's not hoarding stuff. Fives are very typically minimalistic. It's hoarding their capacity. Like love, connection, energy. They have a small energy tank for people. It's one of the things you're characterized by. So they will subconsciously meter out how much energy is it going to take me to shake hands with people and have meetings with people and have conversations with people through the day. And then I need to go like check out to refuel by myself. They'll often have a space in the house that's just for them. Stereotypical fives, Dr. House and Sherlock Holmes. They're not all that unique and like quirky and like, you know, can be total a-holes, but like those are very interesting, you know, extreme versions, but they fear being helpless and incompetent and incapable. They fear not having the capacity to distinguish or understand reality or to manage in the world. So they want to be capable, competent, and self-sufficient. They don't want to depend on anybody else. The healthy version of them is they start to participate more in the world versus just observing it. And they start to see the world as having an abundance as opposed to, I don't have enough to survive. So it's a little bit more ease filled. They can be part of the whole instead of like so separated from it. Mm-hmm. The average five, they are driven by a scarcity mentality. They hoard their time, their space, their affection. They observe over participating, and thinking substitutes for feeling. So they struggle with anything that makes them feel incompetent. They're super analytical. That's one of their superpowers, actually. But they don't, they just don't engage all the time. They can also be kind of brash because they're not empathetic. They're the least naturally empathetic type. Second is probably eights. And then you start to get into like, you know, threes and anyway, but they just, they don't naturally do empathy, which thankfully can be learned. Thank you, Brené Brown. I love
what
her.
Type is she?
She's my hero. I think she's a one. Oh, okay. I heard her talk about once that she thought she was a one. There's this great podcast with this Enneagram author. And then some stuff came out about him and she took it down. I was so sad. It was amazing. I know. Anyway, so when they're unhealthy, they don't want to depend on anyone or anything. They get defensive, they get private, they get judgmental, they get cynical and sarcastic, and they will go research stuff for days and not come out. It's like, I'm going to, when the pandemic hit, they would be the ones would be like for days on the computer, all the news articles, all the research, all the everything. So they could try to put together this picture of the future that was concrete and predictable. They'll usually only speak up when they know they're right. And then there ain't no arguing with them. It's not happening. So that's unhealthy. Now, they, when they are stressed out, they start to take on characteristics of seven, which is a very outgoing type, but it's less that, and it's more the impulsivity and the not thinking things through that shows up for seven when they're not healthy. And so a type that's usually very planned and very focused and very like this, then this, then this goes like, just starts making decisions that don't make sense. Start being a little bit more like impulsive, a little bit more just like the jerk level goes up a little bit in terms of just not paying attention to how other people feel. So it's a good flare signal of you're not okay. You're not, you know, taking the time and the intention to make, you know, conscious decisions like you normally would. When they're really healthy though, they start to take on some eight characteristics, which is a big shift for a type that does not participate a lot. And they start to get more talkative and a little bit more outgoing and have a little more energy for people and a little bit more like spontaneous, but not in a detrimental kind of a way. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, fives are the type that if they are married to a seven, it's hilarious. They'll go to a dinner party and they'll take separate cars if they're healthy, because the five's like, I'm going to come for a bit and then I need to leave and you can stay and hang out with people, cause I know that's what you need, but I just can't handle it. So yeah. So that's fives. Two more to go. Sixes, loyalists. They are a fear type that's underpinned by more fear. So we have ones that are anger with anger. We have this type that is fear with fear, and they question their ability to handle life. They don't trust themselves to make decisions. So they have like a committee of people, or they have a committee in their mind that they consult before they make decisions, and they fear not having support and guidance. And by contrast, the thing they want and they need in life is support and guidance. So this is a type that is like logical and can see the stuff that can go wrong. And they, without them, we would not survive as a species. Like we just wouldn't, and companies wouldn't survive because people would be like, let's do this fun project. They wouldn't have the six going, but we need to wait till Q2 because we don't have the budget right now and we're going to blow everything up. Right. So they can be more analytical and very logical. And when they're healthy, they're super productive and organized and honest. Like honesty is huge for them. Building trust is huge for them. They're a great judge of character. And when they're healthy, they start to believe things will be okay. Versus in their average space where it's like, I'm stuck in my head. I'm questioning all the things. I have these like 18 different worst case scenarios that could happen. And I'm working on number 19 right now because I need to be prepared for all of them. Right. And I sometimes joke that in the pandemic, they were the ones that had toilet paper. Like they were prepared because they planned for this stuff. They and it was like their coming. Worst yeah. nightmare come true.
Okay.
So it's also very hard for them because it's like, now I have proof that this stuff can actually go wrong.
Yeah.
So there's been a lot of like mental health challenges for sixes. Sixes can also be very prone when they're not healthy and self-aware to get sucked into like programs, or I've seen this in the coaching industry a lot. There's like programs and stuff out there that are just not the right thing for them. But they're like, but I need support and guidance. And this looks like I can trust this person. And then they stay way too long because they develop this loyalty and this connection. And it's like, I'm supposed to be loyal. I'm supposed to be dependable because that's what I need to be. and that's who I am. And so there's this over attachment to, I am loyal and I am dependable. And all types have that. And based on our need structures, like for me, I am helpful and needed. That if I'm not feeling that way, my subconscious looks for, my ego looks for, how can I go be that?
Right.
Because that's what I am. So I'm not safe and okay unless I prove that to myself over and over and over again. So when they're unhealthy, they move from contingency planning into paranoia. The world's unfair. We can't trust people. I can't trust myself. Others have to make decisions because I can't do it because I don't know if I'm going to make the right call. And so it's the coolest thing. And I've had the absolute honor of seeing some clients move through this that are sixes. They just totally don't trust themselves. And they're like, what should I do here? What should I do here? What should I do here? To starting to say, like, I was going to ask you for advice on this. And then I thought I should just do this. And then I trusted myself. And I'm like, they go dance around the room. But you know, like it's, that's the possibility. And that's what's available to them when they start to do their work. So sixes that have a five wing are more introverted, intellectual, cautious. They're more authority figure driven. They get into analysis paralysis. Sixes with a seven wing are more playful, more animated, more adventuristic, and still some anxiousness, but they'll take on a little bit of risk. Compared to seven, it's not a lot of risk, but compared to other sixes, it's a little bit of risk. When they're stressed out, they take on workaholic tendencies of three. And they start to hoard material resources because then that'll help them feel like they're safe and okay. Right. They won't do things they don't think they can do well. They might misrepresent themselves as like, oh yeah, I could totally handle that. Even though they don't think they can. When they're in health though, they start to take on that chill, everything's okay of type nine. They start to believe that the world might actually be okay. And they start to trust themselves to have the resilience and the capacity to move through what they need to move through. So type seven, and we always joke that we leave them for last because sevens tend to get distracted and move on to other things. So type seven, they are characterized by a kryptonite of gluttony, avoiding painful feelings. They gorge themselves on positive experiences is the best way I've ever heard it put. And so they love to plan. They love to anticipate. They love to build new adventures. The anticipation is actually where the joy lives for them, not in doing the thing, because then it's over and they don't like completion because then they're limited. They fear being trapped in pain and deprivation. They desire satisfaction, sustainable joy, fulfillment. When they're healthy, they start to understand that short-term happiness and longer-term sustainable joy are different. And they start to experience a bigger range of emotions of going from like, I just want to be like happy, but I don't want to go into the negative stuff. I don't want to be over there. I don't want to handle that stuff, to being able to swing the pendulum a little bit further, being able to actually work through the difficult stuff. And then that opens them up to experiencing just more of life and interacting on a deeper level with people. Average, they are reframers. That is one of their self-defense mechanisms. And we don't have time to jump into all of those, obviously, but they can take anything sad, anything hard, and they can just automatically turn it into, well, this is what's good about it, which, you know, can be great if intentionally chosen, but if it's always an avoidance tactic, not so much. Unhealthy. They see themselves and their environment as inadequate. And they look for instant gratification. They can be reckless. They never finish anything. It's like idea, idea, idea. They can be idea factories, but yeah. It's like, you got to finish stuff. So that's them when they're not in a great space. When they really get stressed out, they move to one and they start to take on that inner critic's thing. And they start to look for certainty, which for a variety driven type, like sevens are the most variety driven period of all types ever in the history of types. And sixes are certainty. So it's funny, they live beside each other, but sevens start to look for more certainty. They start to get more critical. They start to get more perfectionistic. They start to procrastinate more and just not get stuff done. Mm-hmm. Versus when they're in security, they start to take on a little bit more groundedness and think things through and get them done and focus of type five. And a little bit less of that, like, I need to be around people and fun. And more like, okay, but what are we working on and where are we going? And just, okay, we're going there. Yeah. So that's that. Sevens with a six wing, they're a little more settled, a little more conscientious. They are a little more anxious because they take on that kind of worst case thing. funny, accepting, entertaining. Sevens with an eight wing, again, very, very entrepreneurial. They can be competitive, bold, aggressive, playful. They want power and control in life. They get really easily bored. And they're the ones that are really prone to start and not finish. So that is our fire hose intro to the Enneagram. Like, I hope that we covered all the base pieces. Like I said, yeah. You're going to have to listen to this like four times to catch it all. Cause it's like nuts. And we've scratched the surface.
Yeah.
This is what I need people to understand is we have scratched the surface. And I really love like when we can run actual courses on this stuff, because we get to get into the weeds a little more and look at things with subtypes and conflict and all of that, but it'll give people a start. So
yeah, I'd love to share when you run courses or more information or how people can connect with you. So anything that you find valuable, we'll add to the show notes of this episode too.
Sounds amazing. Okay. Well, I will keep you posted. And if any of you all want to follow what's happening with Enneagram things, then, you know, Kendra will have links out and stuff, but it's been so fun. And now I'm going to go breathe
so much. And get some water.
Yeah, exactly. So awesome. Yeah, all my love and virtual hugs. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for being on again.
That was awesome. Thank you so much, Julie, for coming on the show again and giving us your insight on Enneagrams. I find it so helpful when we discover more about ourselves, why we're predisposed to certain thoughts, certain feelings, and I've always been interested in Enneagrams, so this was very enlightening. Guys, you can check out Julie at juliewenger.com or check out her Tribe of Unicorns unicorn page at tribeofunicorns.com. And don't forget, please leave us a review wherever you happen to be listening to this podcast, and come find me. I'm on Instagram. That's where I live, at Kendra Beavis. Let me know, what is your type and what did you get out of this episode? I'll see you next week.